Deborah McGregor here. I am the principal investigator for the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project out of York University. And you'll be listening to, in this podcast, from Monica Shafik, who's an undergraduate student at York University. And she'll be sharing her perspectives on her experience in speaking about the Wet'suwet'en issue occurring across the country. So this panel was recorded at York University on February 10th. Monica Shafik is an undergraduate student at York University and a research assistant on the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project. She provided a perspective of being a student in class and hearing people wanting to speak about this particular issue and having anxiety around how to go about that respectfully and appropriately. How do you even pronounce the name properly? How do we talk about this? She also provided some insights on, because there's been, violence experienced by the Wet'suwet'en people and also by the supporters, about the importance of self-care in getting involved in being a supporter or and acting in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en people. So she had some good insights from an undergraduate perspective from people who are new to Canada, who may not know the whole history of Indigenous, non-Indigenous relations or Indigenous and state relations. So she'd offered that very grounded perspective as an undergraduate student, how to maybe think about and approach learning more about this this particular issue.
Hi folks, Nofer Shai and Tesbihav. My name is Monica. I am on Deb's research team. Also, I deal with like social media, so like we're going to be sending out a lot of resources. If you want to DM us, you'll probably be talking to me. So just slide into those DMs, it's fine. And so I feel like in order to meaningfully engage with the conversation, I feel like my positionality here is important. So as a Coptic person, I come from an Indigenous community, specifically in North Africa. But because of land dispossession, because of the sort of paralleled issues that my Indigenous community faced, I actually came to Canada as a refugee when I was 3 years old. And a lot of the sort of propaganda that my parents were told about Canada is that it's a land of the free and America as well, land of the free, but it's also a place where you can live in peace. And so fleeing from ethnic cleansing and religious persecution, that was the sort of way that Canada was marketed to my parents. So we came here, but my parents did a very great job, and I definitely thank them for this, like all the time, of reminding me of what struggles my Indigenous community is facing back home and the contemporary sort of issues that we face. And in learning about my community, as like was mentioned, it definitely takes a toll on your spirit and your body. And so I was shocked to sort of learn through a lot of independent study, which is also another topic of conversation, that many of the issues that Indigenous communities face here is paralleled with Indigenous struggles on a transnational level. And so when we engage in these conversations, it's important to understand that there are growing, and again, because of social media, there's these growing sort of networks or infrastructures where networks can be developed, where transnational solidarity between Indigenous communities is being developed. And unfortunately, it's being developed because of shared sort of relationships that Indigenous communities face with colonial states. And so even though I am a settler in North America in Turtle Island, I come from an indigenous perspective that allows me to empathize and meaningfully engage with the issues that we face here in North America as a result of this shared sort of understanding of the way the colonial state undermines and forcibly removes indigenous communities from their territory and from their area and sort of works to extract that sort of element of identity in way of life. So that's the sort of positionality I take on the issue. With that in mind, it's, again, it's very troublesome and it's draining, for lack of a better word, to understand that these issues are contemporary and it's not just, you know, something within a history book. This is happening in 2020. And with the advent of social media and new ways of knowledge dissemination, I feel like as settlers or as indigenous people, we have a shared sort of obligation to share and engage what's happening in this, like in this land and on this space. And even though it's not directly something that we can see, like it's not down the street, as what JC mentioned, like there are talks about a pipeline going through the Great Lakes. And so the precedent that these sort of movements set and the ways in which the colonial state and the Canadian government sort of works to override, hopefully not successfully, but the autonomy and the sovereignty of Indigenous nations, you might not see it in your backyard, but a level of complacency that sometimes people have will result in, you know, the state feeling like it can do this in different contexts. And before you know it, this level of complacency could result in them doing it in more localized areas. So just because we're not in a place where we can physically see it, it doesn't mean that we have any less of an obligation to engage in the conversation. And I think a lot of the times what sort of hinders people's engagement or hinders people's willingness to engage is are things that, if you're critically analyzing it, could be and should be overlooked. A lot of times, like I actually, I shared the toolkit, the Wet'suwet'en supporter toolkit in my class a few weeks back, and a few students came up to me and they mentioned that they were interested in learning more, but they didn't really feel comfortable speaking on the issue because they had trouble with the pronunciation of certain names. And so I feel like there are things that sometimes when you're not necessarily comfortable with the language, you may feel as though you're not in a position of authority to engage with that sort of dialogue. But again, with the advent of social media and technology, there are tools that are available to help you with the pronunciation. Like I personally struggled with the pronunciation, so I ended up Googling or like writing the name in like YouTube or YouTube. And when the videos came up through like news reporting and also like the things that they've posted on their social media, I was able to understand, you know, that thing that would have been a hindrance to me and use that to, you know, not only inform the perspective I have and the dialogue I have, but also share in that sort of alternative way that you can then engage with the material. So I think that's a huge issue. I personally have like a personal and professional interest in social media, so I also think with the advent of social media and stuff, and again, sorry to keep harping on this, but there's so many different perspectives that are being shared on the issue, and I think it's important to emphasize and center the perspectives of the actual land defenders at the time. So looking at CBC or looking at, you know, like a state, state-funded news news outlets, you could have a very skewed and often misguided understanding of the realities of the situation. So I think within our dialogues, it's important to center the outlets that the actual land defenders are using to disseminate the knowledge disseminate the knowledge of what's actually going on. So as you mentioned, like. The narrative that like the Wet'suwet'en are like up to no good. You have to be very critical of where you're getting your information and whose perspective is actually being centered within that conversation. So with the IJA, like social media stuff, we're gonna be doing our best to sort of to stand true to that sort of commitment and center those perspectives. So if you're looking for things not only to inform yourself, but to invite others into the conversation, we're gonna be sort of passing along the resources that are given to us. And it's important, I think, when engaging in those sort of those conversations, to mention the fact that we are getting our knowledge from the perspectives of the actual land defenders, as opposed to colonial or like state-funded news outlets. So also be critical with that. The last thing I'm going to say, and I think it touches on everybody's points, is that when understanding what's going on, it's very easy to be disheartened, given the sheer force that some of these individuals are using and the just blatant violence and the disrespect that's happening. I think Deb mentioned that she saw a video of a car literally plowing through a group of protesters. And I think what also discourages a lot of people from having meaningful engagements is this recent sort of phenomena called compassion fatigue. So again, with social media, we don't just see what's happening in Toronto or in North America, but we see what's happening around the globe. And so it's very easy for people to either be disheartened or for people not necessarily know how to meaningfully engage in a particular conversation, because while there's one thing happening, there's also 72 globally. So people aren't necessarily sure where to allocate either their energy, their time, or their resources. And so I think with that, we should also, when we can, and I'll do my best to sort of do research and share these materials, but we should also talk about the ways in which land defenders, either Indigenous or non-Indigenous or people globally, can take care of themselves and the self-care practices that that these land defenders and protesters need in order to be self-sustaining and self-sufficient when engaging in these conversations. Because of the level of state violence that happens, it's very easy for activists to feel burnt out or to feel completely discouraged or, you know, disheartened with what's happening. So this isn't the first time, as was mentioned, that the state sort of oversteps. And with the continual pattern that we see, it's very difficult for people to feel like they can engage all the time. But I think it's also important to know and to sort of navigate the ways in which you can take care of yourself so that you're able to engage in these conversations on a constant basis when needed to, and not necessarily feel burnt out or feel isolated. Because a lot of the times you'll find, again, like, you know, through research and stuff, that a lot of these issues are reoccurring, not just within the Canadian state, but within different colonial states. And building that sense of solidarity and building that sense of open and continual dialogue, not just with Indigenous land defenders, but how settlers like us can actually contribute to the conversation in a meaningful way. And so, I definitely think, like, take care of yourself, meaningfully engage, and center the perspectives of the actual land defenders, as opposed to prioritizing and just receiving knowledge from state-funded news outlets. Thank you.
Miigwech for listening to this podcast. And I would like to point you also to the whole suite of podcasts, which you can find on the Indigenous Environmental Justice website at York University. You can hear from all the speakers who participated on the panel on the Canadian state and Wet'suwet'en people. Also on the website, you can find further information on any other kind of activities and events that are occurring in relation to Indigenous environmental justice and the Wet'suwet'en people. Miigwech.